You're listening to SBS News.
Hi everyone, Ricardo Gonsalves here with On The Money for this Wednesday, the 30th of September 2020 from the SBS Newsroom. It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap. Later, health insurance premiums are set to rise from tomorrow. What can you do about it? But first, the Australian share market lost around $43 billion today, and it follows the US presidential debate. So what didn't the market like about it? For more, I spoke with Eleanor Cray, market strategist at Saxo Bank. Eleanor, some were saying that the US presidential debate was going to be a catalyst for investors today. Was it?
Look, I think it was less of a catalyst than some were expecting. I mean, I guess we saw the usual antagonistic comments from President Trump, which were very much to be expected if his last 4 years in office have been watched by investors. But I think more broadly, what is very important for markets here is the prospect of this second round of fiscal stimulus, which is very much MIA when it comes to markets at the moment. And of course, the resurgent COVID-19 wave that we are seeing in Europe at the moment and in some parts of the US as well. And I think that's really what's going to play into market sentiment as we head towards the US election. When it comes to this debate, I think what markets were really watching was the probability of the contested outcome. And I think that this debate did nothing to dispel that probability, particularly when it comes to President Trump's comments.
A contested outcome, is that the worst possible outcome for this election for markets?
Look, certainly for markets, the contested outcome brings the biggest element of uncertainty and surprise. And if we take our minds back to the only really historical precedent that we have, which is the Bush versus Gore campaign in 2000, we do know that the S&P 500 lost around 9% over the period that came from election night to when the result was confirmed, which was actually in early December. And we know that in this instance, it could actually potentially be a lot longer until we see that result confirmed. We do know that already there are accusations of fraud surrounding mail-in voting that are swirling at large. And I think there is this distinct probability of a red mirage. Now, that's not a phrase that I've coined. I think that comes from Axios, but it's actually the capacity for on election night, there really to be some confusion around who has actually won, whereby we know that Republicans are more likely to show up and vote in person, whereas the Democrats are more likely to mail in their votes. So if we have on election night, we can imagine that those Republican votes are being counted, but the Democrat votes that are being mailed in, particularly in battleground states where we know that some of those votes are not able to be counted until after election night, we could see this situation arising where it looks like President Trump has won off the back of the fact that Republicans have turned out and voted in person. And we could see the capacity for him and maybe certain media outlets to really cling to that narrative. And that's where we see, I guess, this unfolding situation where we have the contested election outcome that ends up potentially in the Supreme Courts and where we have, I guess, the capacity for civil unrest to really break out in the US.
Speaking of outcomes, who is the market perceiving as the best candidate for both, I guess, the global economy and for investments?
It's a very difficult question. I think when it comes to the markets, obviously President Trump is seen as more pro-business and more pro-markets, but he does come with that wild card of the unknown on the geopolitical front, which has had the capacity to really cause fractures and ructions throughout global markets, as we've seen throughout the past 24 months with his trade war with China. And I think when it comes to Joe Biden, we do have, although we have the clearly negative market implications that come with increased corporate taxes and with increased capital gains taxes, we also have the capacity for potentially an increased fiscal spend, which could offset that. And I think really when it comes to markets, potentially what is consequential about this election is the high probability of the contested outcome. But beyond that, I think the election result is maybe not the most consequential thing for markets. What is actually the key driver is probably going to be central bank policy. It's going to be Fed policy, how accommodative the Fed remains. And we know that they are going to remain very, very accommodative if their recent musings are anything to be guided by. And I think, of course, the recovery out of this COVID-19 induced crisis as well is probably going to be more consequential for markets than potentially the election outcome.
Eleanor Cray there from Saxo Bank. So by the close, the S&P ASX 200 lost 2.29% to 5,815 points. CSL led the losses, down by 2.9%. BHP off by 3.5%. The major banks were down. CBA the worst, off by 2.2%. Oil stocks were also slammed because the price of crude fell overnight, and all up of the top 200 stocks, only 11 finished in positive territory. The best was corporate travel management, up by 6.6%. For more, I spoke earlier with Francesco De Stratis, investment advisor at Ord Minnett. Francesco, the market is down today. How much of that is to do with the US presidential debate, and how much because it's the last day of the September quarter?
Yeah, look, I think most of it is to do with the presidential debate. I think most dealing rooms around Sydney and Melbourne had them on the screens and were watching it intently. The US futures dipped lower during and after the debate, so obviously that's driven our market lower. A lot of concerns around whether, you know, when the election is completed, that there's going to be a decision. And that's creating a lot of uncertainty, and markets do not like uncertainty, as we know.
So when we look at the market today locally, where were the major moves?
Yeah, look, everything's down. I mean, if you look at the biggest mover in sector-wise is energy stocks. They're more than 3% lower. Santos is much lower, despite announcing a positive where they've been approved to get some more gas out of Narrabri. You know, a lot of concern around Santos's gas supply, and that's added to their reserves, but markets, you know, down all over the board. So, yeah, we've got utilities down 2%, industrials down 2%, financials, obviously driven by the banks, they're all down 2%. So all sectors are negative. The one positive light on the market is corporate travel. They're raising some funds for an acquisition in the US.
And we got an update out of China. Manufacturing there is actually expanding. What do you make of the Chinese economy and its implication for Australia?
Yeah, look, I'm not surprised in that rebound. I mean, obviously with COVID, you had a fair bit of restrictions within the economy, so a lot of things got shut down. So they're starting off low base, so a bit of a turnaround's a positive, not only for the Chinese, it's a positive for the Australian economy as well. Obviously, commodities is one of our major drivers for our economy, and they are our biggest customer. So an increase in manufacturing in China is a good thing for Australia from a commodities perspective, potentially on some consumer goods as well, although with trade wars and a little bit of negativity coming out of the Chinese against Australia, you know, some consumer goods are probably going to be a bit restricted as well.
Francesco De Stratis there from Ord Minnett. From tomorrow, health insurance premiums will rise. Health funds delayed this increase in April because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But now, on average, Consumer Group Choice says insurance premiums will rise 2.9%, costing families hundreds of dollars more each year. So what can you do about it? Here's Dean Price from Choice.
Make sure that the health insurance you've got covers only the things that you need. Shop around, see if there's a better deal out there. From our research, we've seen people being able to save well over $1,000 by changing the policy that they're on. So see what's out there, see what's available, and also contact their private health insurer and see if they can do a better deal for them.
Dean Price from Choice. Finally, let's check in on the telecommunications sector now. And given the pandemic and bushfires, how have our telcos performed? And what have complaints been like? Sarah Dowling spoke with the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman, Judy Jones.
Judy, the report today, it shows that there's really a tale of two halves. Can you explain that?
Yeah, sure. So overall, we received just over 127,000 complaints from Australian residential consumers and small businesses, which is down 4% on the previous year, which is good. But it was a year of two halves. So the first part of the year, complaints continued the downward trend they'd started at the end of the previous year. But then the summer bushfires and floods, and then ultimately the pandemic hit Australia, and we saw complaints increasing in that period.
So just looking at that second half, it seems like providers were able to hold up their service partly because of the NBN providing some extra capacity. But it seems like telcos, people weren't able to get through to their telcos. Is that right?
Yeah, there was such a challenge for everybody. So when the pandemic hit in March, April, and there were worldwide closures to keep people safe, those telcos with offshore call centres or back office functions in the Philippines and India were impacted by those having to close down. And that produced huge challenges for telcos in having their consumers be able to contact them and just to carry out the support that they need to keep the services running. So we saw a 1,500% increase and complaints from consumers who are unable to contact their provider about their internet service. And obviously, with everyone moving to work and study from home, that dependence on the internet was quite significant at that time.
Sarah Dowling there, speaking with the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman, Judy Jones. Tomorrow we'll be focusing on house prices. The latest report from CoreLogic will be out. That is On the Money for this Wednesday, the 30th of September. Final day of the quarter. I'm Ricardo Gonsalves. You can follow me on Twitter at Business Ricardo. Speak to you then.